Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community In Depth. Boy, I gotta say, I have a lot of wonderful people that rotate into KDWA, but Nancy Turner is here. She is one of my all-time favorites. She is the founder of This Old Horse, a wonderful organization that helps rescue horses. And Nancy, it's so great to see you. Thanks for coming in again. How have you been?
I've been wonderful. Everything is going really well. And I also wanted to say we're 12 years old this year.
We started. Give yourself a ding on the bell. What the heck?
We started in April of 2012 is when the first horses came on to the property.
And you started very humbly.
Yes, we had a modest hope that we would have about 24 horses and that they would just live there as a sanctuary. It turns out we've helped over 700 now, and we have 10 locations and have welcomed over 4,000 volunteers over those years. And it was beyond even what I could have imagined. But the idea of it was to build community. And I always want to tell you that you were the first person in our community to welcome us here in that very first year to help us tell our story.
Thank you.
Very grateful.
Thank you so much. I remember I came home and told my husband that I had met you. Your story was just so compelling and so tender. And I don't know much about horses, but the way that you described these horses and their passion for living, their passion for having a job to fulfill, the way that they look at you. Tell some of these stories, because the way you would describe horses is so beautiful. They're magnificent animals, aren't they?
First of all, they're so beautiful. They're not controversial. People might not want a horse or might be afraid of them, but I can't think of anyone who just doesn't think they're beautiful or has some awe of them. And they help build civilization. When you look at that, the course of history up until the last century has been based on the backs of horses. That's how wars were fought. That's how everything happened. How people moved, how people got around the world was on horseback. And so I think that part of that is just a culture of people appreciating and all the things we talk about as horsepower and even cars. What's the horsepower? Boats, what's the horsepower? Everything is kind of measured in that. But I think that because it's been kind of a partnership with humans, an alliance, that people love them and revere them. The other thing about horses being herd animals, that they are very empathic and very intuitive. So they always need to know what's going on in their environment, and they rely on the herd to give them information. And so when people understand horses' body language, it's really powerful, because you can read their body language so easily, and that makes you feel comfortable with them right away. And I think I told you about my mom, who was afraid of horses. They're big and they're fast and strong, and she was afraid, and our horse that she was petting was acting nervous. And she said, "I'm afraid of him." And he said, "I would tell her all he knows is that we're afraid, that you're afraid." And he's like, "What are we afraid of?" And she's, "I'm afraid of him."
He didn't understand that.
He doesn't know that. He just knows there's something to be fearful. And then you relax, and then the horse does. And that's what's so powerful about it. Most of our volunteers have no horse experience. That's what I love about it. It's such a welcoming organization.
I would have thought that they had a lot of experience, and that's why they would step up.
That's true in some places. But for us, people say, "I don't have any experience." It's like, how would you have gotten it? Like, where, unless you grew up with horses or had them, whatever, how would you get experience? All you need to do is get there. If we can get you there, the horses will do the rest. And we have some we call our gateway drugs, because, like, dude, he's this old 30-year-old blind horse, but he'll stand there and let you pet him for the rest of his days. And so people start to feel comfortable around one horse and get to know them, and then it goes from there. So we think if people get there, we'll put you with a horse that will make you understand the whole thing. And as you get more comfortable, like with anything, I know you have dogs, and I'm not a dog person. So when a dog runs up barking, I'm fearful. And then the owner will say, "He's greeting you. Look at his tail."
Yes.
It's like, "Oh, okay." So I think it's just what you're familiar with. And since horses take a lot of land and they're expensive, that people just don't have the experience, but they can get it. Come and help us, volunteer with us, clean out some poop, and it's magic.
Nancy, how did you start out with this vision, though? I know that it was not quite as grand as it has turned out.
Oh.
But what was it that you thought, "I think I could do more to help horses"?
my experience growing up, and I lived next to a barn that let me work there starting at 9 years old, but we couldn't afford a horse. And so I felt welcomed and experienced and got to have horses in my life because of where I grew up in rural Inver Grove Heights. And when I finally could afford it in my 40s, I could finally afford my own horse, and because I did not have a very high paying job. So, you know, when you start to think I can do this, and then I went out to look for a horse, but I thought, well, I'll start volunteering at a therapeutic riding program and, you know, kind of work my way into it. And I saw they were retiring these therapy horses out fast. There's high turnover because it's hard work for therapy horses. Oh. It's hard. It's a hard job because the riders are unbalanced. It's hard. And so that they have usually they have kind of a short life with that before they're just kind of burned, the horse is kind of burned out or not capable physically. So they're retiring them. And then I ended up, because by now I had my own small horse farm, I took two of them, of the horses I worked with, to my own farm. And I was like, they're amazing. These horses that have given this life of service, and they just gave them to me. What am I, like, I thought, you've made a terrible mistake. They're way too good for me. So I went and I approached this program and said, maybe you could keep them. And people like me who volunteer could just help take care of them. You have land, you have volunteers. I think there are people that volunteer that don't want this job but would like just taking care of horses. And I kind of got the bum's rush. It's like, we don't do that. It's like, oh. But here I'm sitting there going, this is a really good idea for somebody else to do, right? This is a great idea for someone to do. And my sister, I don't know if you have sisters, but they don't always want to hear you complain about my treatment. And she goes, why do people think someone else should do their good idea? It's only a good idea if someone else does it. Why don't you do it yourself? So I wrote a business plan, and I thought, this is a terrible idea. It is, you know, that there's no revenue. They eat a lot. This is crazy. So I put it away, and then I was going to eat my emotions, and I went to the refrigerator. I had a rotisserie chicken nut on day one, and I went to cut it with a dull knife, and it pressed down, and the wishbone popped out of the chicken and landed on the counter, and I look at this wishbone, and you know, I had always wished for a horse, and my wish finally came true. But the first star at night, every birthday candle, you know, this life of wishing. And this wishbone kind of popped out right after I gave up on the idea. And I thought, you know, the wishbone is the wish you make when someone else is holding the other end of it. I just felt the air shift and think, a place for horses is not what my goal should be. It's a community that supports horses. And then when you start looking at it from another side to say, what if we built a community? And then people would have the experiences I did and say, I can have horses in my life if I don't have 40 acres and if I don't have the money, but I can help. And that by helping, that creates the way it works. And that's what happened. And
that's how Wishbone started.
Yeah, that's why it's called Wishbone Ranch.
Yes.
Was based on that moment of where you say, I'm going at it the wrong way if we create community. And then you take the leap of faith. My sister then gave me a plaque I have at home that says, sometimes your only mode of transportation is a leap of faith. And
wow,
it's like,
that's very profound.
And it's still a worry all the time because we have a lot of obligation. Once we take a horse in, we have an obligation to it. And so we've helped about 700 horses. And any given day, we have about 195 in our 10 locations. But if someone has adopted a horse from us, and their circumstances change, we're the safety net and it comes back. So you don't ever lose the thread. You know, prices go up and then you raise this much money. Last year, you have to raise that much because it's entirely funded by private donations to the tune of about $1.2 million a year now. And we raise it. And that's why we're having our fundraiser this week, too. We won't get there on Saturday. But part of that is people come to our community and come to our events, and they like what they see, and then they become volunteers, and our volunteers become our adopters. Our adopters are our donors, and it continues that building community. And so far, 12 years, we're still dog paddling, but our head's above water. And
that's just incredible.
It is. I can't believe it.
And just so many horses, they all have their own personalities.
Right.
And they all have a story.
Yeah.
For why they are in need of a place to land.
Exactly. Yeah. And I have a story, just a recent one, and I sent you a little video about that story in advance. But one of the things that happens, we have a big racehorse program in Minnesota. We have transitioned about 200 horses from Running Aces Harness Track and Canterbury Thoroughbred Track and some quarter horses. And what we do is they're not rescue horses. They're transitioning from one career to the next, and we help match them with a new owner and a new career.
What are some of their new careers?
Well, there are hunter jumpers, they're polo horses, dressage horses, you know, kind of show horses, sport horses. Thoroughbreds particularly they're very athletic and they're very fast. A horse that is not fast enough to be successful on the racetrack is plenty fast enough to play polo. You know, so they just need to be retrained into something else. So we help match people who want a sport horse, and we say we have lots of them. And sometimes they come off the track sore or injured, just like any athlete. And we let them stay and rehab, and it's a safe landing, and then they move on. So we might have them just for a few days, and we might have them for a year, depending where they are in their rehab. But we have an incredible placement effort for all of our horses, but our thoroughbreds turn over pretty fast, and they're pretty amazing. And almost one of my personal favorite breeds are thoroughbreds. That's what my first horse was an off-track thoroughbred, and I have an affinity for him. And his legacy for me was giving back, because he gave so much to me. But because of our relationship with the tracks in Minnesota, the racing industry, who I find to be actually very compassionate, very caring.
That's good to
very
hear.
Very supportive, which is not what people always think about racetracks. But Minnesota's are really, really responsible and generous to our cause. But because of that, if some racehorses have, like professional athletes have lots of owners, you know, like any professional athlete,
sponsors.
You might change teams.
Yeah.
So you might play for this team and then you get this team and you get picked up by other teams, and racehorses particularly will probably go through six owners. Once they're done racing, which is usually when they're 3, 4, 5 years old and they live to be 25 or 30, again, like athletes, they have very short careers. They don't track them anymore. They don't keep track of who owns them anymore. Once they're not racing, there's no registry of to say, you don't have to transfer their papers because they're not working anymore. They're retired. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is some of them end up through, we don't know, in what are called kill pens or the slaughter pipeline, where they go to sale for the price of meat. There's no slaughter in the United States right now. There is in Canada and Mexico. So they end up in these holding pens and get shipped across the border. And there is other countries eat horse meat, and there's a market for it. It's not illegal. It's just, you know, I love horses so much.
Right. It's like eating dog meat or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just culturally something we don't do much here. And then there's that. What we do is rescue horses. Anyway, on March 2nd, the racing industry in Minnesota has vowed if a Minnesota bred or a Minnesota raced horse ends up in the slaughter pipeline, that they will get it home. So we found a horse named Macho's Vision that was identified by advocates through her microchip as being in a kill pen in Colorado being shipped to Mexico. So our racing industry stepped in and we took her, which our commitment then is if they get them to us, we'll take them. And so March 2nd, we got her out and we quarantined her. And while she was getting her vet paperwork to come up here to be transferred back to Minnesota, we found out she was pregnant. And she was skin and bones with a big belly, had been mistreated. It was in terrible condition. And we thought the big belly was a parasite load or just poor hay quality, that she was just so undernourished. And you've seen pictures of humans that have starved with big bellies bloated, and it's not so different of rescue horses.
Okay.
She had been starved. So this big belly, which we presume, it turns out to be a foal, and the vet who checked her said, I think it's big and active. I think it's okay. Well, we couldn't wait to get her here then, because it would have been 30 days, but we're like, well, we don't want to have the baby on the trailer.
Right.
It's a 2-day trip. So we got her up to quarantine her up here, and she ended up on April 18th. She had a completely healthy baby boy at our Wishbone Ranch. He's going to be the star of our event Saturday, and we named him Cal. for no reason, mm-hmm. just called him Cal. And she is the most lovely, good mother. And she had given all of it to him, as a mother does. But she had sacrificed, like, her condition was terrible. But his was, he was absolutely perfectly healthy, the right size. He's active. She's a beautiful mother.
And now she's going to get healthy herself.
Yep. And now it's just like, you know what? Now you just eat. We'll take it from here. But you can't imagine the story that she had been a racehorse. She had won over $100,000. She raced for 4 years. She disappeared off the face of the radar. And the next thing that she's headed for slaughter. But she didn't. She's sitting at our barn as we speak
waiting
today.
For us to meet her. Tell us
on
about
Saturday.
Run for the Roses is Saturday, and that's your big event or one of your big events.
Yeah.
Tell us the details.
So it's Run for the Roses. It's a 5K, a certified 5K fun run, which means you don't have to run very fast if you like. You can be part of it. A lot of people walk. And we have a couch potato division where people come and don't walk and shop because we have about 10 vendors. We have a band, Wilkinson James Band plays. We have our tack shop is open. We have a kids center face painting. Our little mini horses are there and open house. So it's just a lot of fun. It's a family fun day. And we just like people to come and see what we're doing and have a lot of fun. And if you want to run, run. If you want to sit on the couch, we'll send you a shirt in the mail. You don't even have to get in the car. It's so virtual. The run itself starts at 10. The gates open at 9. We're done around 1 or 2. It gives you plenty of time to get home and watch the Derby at 5:57.
What a great event and what a great organization you founded.
Thank you.
Be so proud.
You know, I feel that I put the tent up, but what happens in it is the community. You know, I'll take credit that I was willing to start the path, but what I do is so insignificant compared to what everybody does, and it's just, it's a embarrassment of riches for me.
Mm. Well, we cannot wait to come this Saturday, Run for the Roses, and what a great event this is. Starts at 9 o'clock. Do we need to register in advance?
Nope, you can register at the door.
Love
in
that.
The barn.
Love it. And Wishbone Ranch is located where, please?
It's on the intersection of Highway 52 and 190th Street in Vermilion Township.
Wonderful. Great to see you. Congrats
you.
On all
and
your
thank
great
you for
success.
Everything.
Oh, thank you. Nancy Turner, she is the founder of This Old Horse, and you have an opportunity to come out and support them at the Run for the Roses at the Wishbone Ranch this Saturday starting at 9 o'clock. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.